Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. It is Monday, and absolutely loved that song that we played in with because it is the most beautiful day in Johannesburg. Fantastic weather. Hope you all had a wonderful weekend, and thank you for joining us today. We are chatting diabetes. It's Diabetes Month. I think it was World Diabetes Day on the 14th of November, if I got that right. We're chatting to Elske Rich, a dietitian and spokesperson for the Association of Dietetics in South Africa. Let us have your questions relating to diabetes. Anything that you want to know, prevention, treatment, symptoms, these are all the things that we're going to be discussing. WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. We're going to be back with Elske as soon as we've played these ads for you.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Monday morning. You're listening to 101.9 High FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday. My name is Nicholas Singel, and our controller on all the buttons, Craig Guthrie, producer Sima Betsy, have put an amazing show together for you. We are joined by our special guest, Elske Rich, dietitian and spokesperson for the Association of Dietetics in South Africa. Elske, thank you for your time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
It's a very, very important topic, and not just because it's Diabetes Month, because this is something that's going to be affecting all of us. Something I was thinking of during the break that I'd also like to discuss with you is alcohol's effect on diabetes and on our blood sugar, because I think that's something that we don't really take into account. So let's kick off with, what is the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes? If we look at diagnosis, treatment, diet, those type of things.
Yes, so type 1 and type 2 are then the most common forms of diabetes that we are aware of. If we start with type 1, it's basically the one where it gets identified quite early in life because it is the pancreas that is unable to do its job. So the pancreas is an organ in the body, and its job is to then produce insulin, which is a hormone. And what happens is when we eat food and the food goes to our stomachs, it's obviously broken down. And in the stomach, the food then becomes glucose, which is the sugar in the body. So we know that when that goes into the bloodstream, the insulin is needed to take it into the muscle and the rest of the body to be used for energy, for our lungs to work, everything like that. So with type 1, it's usually identified in children already because now the sugar stays in the blood and there's no insulin that is produced to take the sugar from the blood into the body. So this would then lead to weight loss. A lot of children suffer with stunting in their growth. And then obviously the more common symptoms like increased thirst, frequent urination, because the body's trying to balance out the sugar that's in the blood. So they will eventually need insulin injections, where we then try to mimic what the pancreas does for us every day without us having to think about it. So that's quite the intense form of diabetes, type 1. Then type 2 diabetes is what we call a non-communicable disease. So it's one that can come from lifestyle, even though it still has strong genetic components. So if your mother was maybe diabetic or something like that, you are more prone to it. But we know that having an unhealthy lifestyle could worsen the symptoms and sometimes also be the cause. So this is where the body does produce insulin, but it's either not recognized by the body or it's not enough, or the way we are eating and living is making that the pancreas has to overwork itself, and then it's not enough. So for that, we usually start out with oral medication that we have to use, and then when that doesn't work anymore, or as the body gets older, it can also lead to you having to use injections. So here the body does give you the insulin, but it's not used correctly. So here we see the opposite, where sometimes it can be weight gain because there's now all this insulin that's not being used, and that's still a fat because it's a hormone. So then it gets stored in that way. So these are the most common two different types. And then obviously type two is usually later in life, when you've now progressed along this genetic component. And then there's a talk about a type 3 diabetes now, mm-hmm. where it's being studied and linked to maybe Alzheimer's or like the degeneration of your brain cells, which is also then because of the amount of sugar that either doesn't reach them and then they go backwards. And then the last one is also gestational diabetes. So this can happen while a mother is pregnant. And most of the time, this is resolved once the baby is being born. But if you had gestational diabetes, you are still at a much higher risk for developing type 2 diabetes even after your child is born.
Sure. Wow. If we touch on the type 2 diabetes, where you mentioned unhealthy lifestyle, what is an unhealthy lifestyle? Because I think the challenge that so many of us face in the modern world is we think our lifestyle is okay. You know, we have our fruit juice for breakfast. We have our cereals. We have our toasts for breakfast. We think we're doing great. And then we have more refined carbs, as an example, for lunch. And we're going through, you know, okay, I'm on a low-fat yogurt, but, it's strawberry-flavored, all of these things. What are the risks that we need to be looking out for, the dangers in our nutrition?
Yes. So I definitely think that at the end of the day, everything in the body is interlinked. And there it just starts with, okay, as we get older, we are more predispositioned to getting certain diseases. Our genetics have a component, but when we look at our environment, so your lifestyle, that can be the types of exercise you do or having a sedentary lifestyle where you don't do any exercise. It can be the types of food we eat or the amount of food we eat. And then also the other components that we know play a big role, like not sleeping enough because of stress. Stress is another big one. People smoking to also cope with stress. And then also alcohol consumption. So at the end of the day, there are lots of different things that influence our health. But when it comes to eating, I think a lot of people are going for more convenient routes. And that is because we are living on such a time crunch. So at the end of the day, when you combine everything, not sleeping well, not looking after your body well, not making time for exercise, it definitely stimulates the body to go backwards and to then identify as a person living with diabetes. So at the end of the day, when it comes more specifically to food, like you mentioned now, we want to consume foods that are healthy for the body and give us everything we need every day. And this is sometimes what we struggle with, because for one day we would eat really well, and then the next day is just chaos, and then it's only one big meal in the evening. And then the day after that, we're getting a little bit better, but we're still not managing everything. So trying to be as consistent as possible is what I think most people struggle with. Because we know an apple is healthier than a chocolate. We know that. But the thing is, there are all these other things that are influencing our health that we don't always have control over.
Right. And I think the risk that we also run, because our bodies are a lot smarter than us. So if our blood sugar does drop, our brain's immediately going to trigger to what's going to give it the biggest boost. Hey, let's go get that bran muffin or that croissant or that, you know, that sandwich that's going to wake us up, rather than, as you said, the apple, which is the stuff that we really need to be looking at. So if we look at sort of what is a healthy diet, maybe a healthy breakfast, we can touch on that to start off. I'd love to get your view on that. And we'll discuss that as soon as we come back from this ad break.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. I'm Nicholas Ingle, and I'm joined by our guest, Elska Rich, dietitian and spokesperson for the Association of Dietetics in South Africa. It's Diabetes Awareness Month, and we're chatting diabetes before we went to ad break, we were chatting a little bit about nutrition, and I want this to also lead us into how to manage diabetes. And if we could start, Elske, with let's look at diet and then lifestyle and then the medication that's required, maybe starting with type 2 and then moving on to type 1, which obviously has far more serious consequences, immediate serious consequences. What's a good diet for you? What would you recommend people look at? Breakfast, lunch, dinner?
So at the end of the day, when it comes to diabetes management, something that we always come back to is your fiber intake. So fiber intake is obviously something that's going to help slow down the whole process of food moving throughout the body. So if we consume any meal throughout the day, whether it be breakfast, lunch, dinner, or a snack, we always want it to be something that's filling. So you leave feeling that feeling of satiety. You don't want to leave it feeling a little bit hungry, because then you're going to overeat at the next meal, and that can then cause the bad sugar spike. So we really want to focus on a diet high in fiber. And the way that we achieve this is trying to include fiber in every meal of the day. So what foods are high in fiber and what is fiber? Fiber is usually the part of food that aids in digestion and eventually also becomes our stool. So fiber helps that you feel fuller for longer. It helps the food move out of the stomach slower. It helps then, because the food is moving out of the stomach slower, that the sugar doesn't spike. The sugar goes up slowly in a more controlled way. Mm-hmm. And then it gives the medication and the body time to respond. So this would be things like fruits and vegetables. You can think about the fibers inside of the fruits and vegetables, and then also things like the skins and the pips and the seeds. All of that is fiber. Also then, when choosing your carbohydrates or your grains, choosing whole wheat or whole grain carbs, so brown rice instead of white rice, brown whole wheat bread instead of white bread, whole wheat pasta or whole wheat couscous instead of just a normal original, maybe a bit more refined options, just because this fiber is then going to give us the benefits I've been talking about. And that fiber also goes into the blood along with the sugar and has many other benefits, which we know are sometimes also linked to diabetes. So it helps to control blood pressure. It can help to remove bad cholesterol from the blood. So at the end of the day, fiber is really the first target audience, you could say. And then after fiber, we look at low GI foods. Now, low GI is obviously referring to the glycemic index that food gets. So every single food product out there has a score. And then if this score is considered a high GI, it means that it pushes up the sugar quite significantly within a short amount of time after consuming it. So we would want food that is higher in fiber and then has a low GI. And luckily for us, most of the times, these are the same types of food. So we can assume if something is quite high in fiber, the GI would be a bit less. So that would then once again be the whole grain products we've spoken about. And then also things like meats and healthy fats and things like that. So a dietitian is never going to tell you to exclude a certain food group. And I think when it comes to diabetes, a lot of people are quite scared of carbohydrates because the older generation were told to immediately stop eating bread, stop eating potatoes, stop eating anything that is sweet. And although that has some truth to it, where we have to control what we eat, it's not at all a case of we have to completely cut it out. At the end of the day, the energy that the brain uses every day is mostly from carbohydrates, because they get broken down to glucose. So in order for the body not to use muscle mass or some of the healthy fats that we need to just keep the body going, we still need this amount of carbohydrates. But for most people, at every mealtime, it's mostly the size of their fist or a quarter of the plate. And we know that in South Africa, we eat half a plate of grains or starch and half a plate of meat, and then we call it a day. So if we are trying to prevent diabetes, or we are trying to treat and live with diabetes, this is not what we would want to do. We still need the carbohydrates, but the correct type, that is high in fiber, and only a quarter of the plate. The same with the meats. We want to choose lean, healthy meats. So whether that be lean mince, chicken without the skin, fish that is not fried in oil, Because at the end of the day, meat is not the thing that is wrong. It's the way we cook it. Mm-hmm. So when we braai, it sounds weird, but removing the fat from the steak and the chops and everything like that before we braai it. Because while it's busy cooking, the fat goes into the meat, and then that high fat content then leads to further unstabilized blood sugar levels. Mm-hmm. So once again, you have your quarter plate of your whole grain starches, then you have your quarter plate of proteins, and then the other half of your plate that is left is where you are going to focus on vegetables. So this is obviously something that not many people do. I don't know about you, but I don't eat half a plate of vegetables 5 times a day. So with that being said, it can still be a goal that we move towards. And even if we just start with that being the goal for dinner times, where we don't just eat vegetables on a Sunday or have some leftovers of Sunday's vegetables on Monday and Tuesday, but we really try to make vegetables at least 3 times a week, have some as leftovers so that we have vegetables every day. Not just because those vegetables are higher in fiber and they help us control sugar, but also because they have all the other things we know about, the vitamins, the minerals, and all of that. If that is addressed and it's consumed and you have a colorful plate many times a day, it helps with your sleep schedule. It helps with your hunger hormone levels. It can help with many different things in this overall lifestyle that we are talking about. So I think what a lot of us struggle with is finding time, whether that's finding time to plan and buy and prepare and cook meals, or whether that is time for family within trying to fit in homework and exercise and healthy habits. So at the end of the day, taking existing habits that we already have can really help to improve our overall lifestyle. So if you have a habit of first thing coffee in the morning, link something else to it, maybe starting your day with a glass of water before you have coffee, or drinking multivitamins the first thing in the morning with your coffee. And then if there's another habit during the day, like maybe getting home after work and then you're very ravenous or very hungry, having something prepared for you to have then rather than going into the pantry and finding anything that's accessible and tasty. So it's knowing your day and planning around the way it already is. Because if we try to change the way we eat, the way we exercise, the way we live all at the same time, it's only going to last a few days before we are exhausted. So at the end of the day, thinking about sustainability, knowing what you want to achieve, but making it smaller, more approachable steps that we can eventually build towards. So we all know exercise is important. We all know exercise helps in the body to actually take that glucose from the blood into the muscles. It makes the muscles more susceptible to insulin. So it's going to help the medication work. It's going to help our body process the sugar we get from food if we increase exercise. Now, I think if we think exercise, most people think I have to go to the gym 1 to 2 times a day, has to be for an hour, it has to be lifting weights, or it has to be cardio. So just taking that idea and changing it to say, be active. So whether it is going to the gym, dancing while you are cooking, walking around the house while the ads are playing on TV between your show, everyone just getting out of the house as soon as homework is done, even if it is just gardening, it's still a form of exercise because you're using your body. And that is going to in turn also help to just bring back that state of self preservation and self-discipline and being proud of yourself. Because at the end of the day, we are currently always busy doing things for other people, indirectly to benefit us sometimes, but most of the times we put everyone ahead of ourselves. So just doing something small for yourself, like some exercises before you bath, whether it's just a few squats or lunges or sit-ups or anything, is already going to give you that sense of pride and then flow over to you making different food choices because you are already investing in yourself. So obviously, there are lots of unhealthy habits that a lot of South Africans have, like smoking and alcohol abuse rather than just having enough. So at the end of the day, the link to diabetes is definitely there. And there are safe amounts of alcohol to consume. But at the end of the day, alcohol is most often also quite high in sugar and very high in energy, which is then seen as unnecessary added sugar and energy in the diet. So the recommendation by the World Health Organization is one drink per day for women and two drinks per day for men. Now, this does not mean that if you don't drink anything in the week, you can have 14 drinks on Saturday. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. So you have to make sure that you don't exceed that amount. And if you do, to drink enough water in between or switch to maybe an alcohol-free option in between. Mm-hmm. Just because that is what the body can manage. After that, it becomes a toxin, and then the body doesn't prioritize anything else, and it leads to weight gain.
Right. And it you know, the things that we touched on with this and the sense that I get is developing an awareness of the body. And also, it's not about perfection and overwhelming yourself. Many years ago, probably close on 15, 20 years ago, I sat down one day, I had a bit of extra time on my hands, and I ate a proper lunch compared to what I'd been eating before. So it was a nice green salad, it was a chicken breast, no skin, and it was sweet potato. And I had had a lot of water up to that point in the day, and I felt absolutely incredible. I was focused, I had good energy, no sort of sugar drops. And I sort of realized, hang on, I need to start paying attention to what I'm eating. With the clients that you work with the work that you do, how big a lack of awareness, of being mindful of what we eat and how we feel, have you found? How big a problem is that? And how beneficial is it to, hey, I ate this and I was shaking 2 hours later, or my energy crashed 2 hours later?
Yeah, no, I think at the end of the day, because we've said now how busy all of our lives are, mm-hmm. I think it's very common to eat while we are working during lunch, or eat while we are busy watching TV at home, things like that. The norm is not anymore to sit around a table, talk to each other, really enjoy the food we are eating. And that goes for all the meals of the day. In the morning, we are rushing. I mean, most of us women eat while we are busy doing our hair. So at the end of the day, it really is just about the mindful eating that you are mentioning. So mindful eating places a lot of emphasis on tasting your food, breathing in your food, chewing enough times, which also aids in digestion, mm-hmm. and really just making sure that you eat enough. So at the end of the day, we are also used to the portion that we normally eat, that we dish up, we eat it so quickly before we realize what we've eaten, and then you feel overfull. So at the end of the day, also eating slower is going to help us to also consume sometimes less. And I think this is what happens quite often in the world we live in, where we buy takeaways, and the takeaway is a certain size. And because you don't want leftovers, or you paid quite a lot of money for it, you want to finish it, even though you are full. And then at the end of the day, we are consuming an extra 1,000 kilojoules without us having a second thought about it. And then this adds up. And then becomes a problem later on. So I definitely think taking time with meals is very, very important. And at the end of the day, it's something that you will have to prioritize for yourself. It's not something that someone else can implement in your home. So like you said, sometimes we only see the benefit if we do it ourselves. So challenging yourself or your family, getting everyone on board, even if it's just for 3 days, to see, how is this working? Is it making a difference in our lives? And if it does, to then continue with it, to make sure that you prioritize it over fitting in one more show or something like that. So I know a lot of times the reason why we watch TV while we eat is because there's no other time in the day to then watch TV. But just making it a thing of, I don't need to watch a 45-minute episode, I'm fine if I just watch 20 minutes. So at the end of the day, prioritizing the correct things, I think, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, because I get the sense that this is knowledge and experience gained from dealing with a lot of clients and hearing sort of what's really happening with life. With moms that I see, I know a big challenge is the kids don't finish the food, so the moms do, you know, so you don't have to throw it away or prep it, or, you know, so you're finishing the snacking and eating what the kids are doing. Really, you know, so what I'm hearing you say is eating, how you eat is as important as what you eat. And it's something that we really should prioritize. One quick thing, just before we go to our next set of ads, Exercise, walking after you eat. I remember growing up as a kid and going to my grandparents in Cape Town for a meal. And because the sun sets late there, we'd be finished dinner at 7 or 7:30 and we'd go for sort of an hour's walk along the beachfront. You always feel so fantastic. You sleep much better because I'm thinking if I eat too much, I can't sleep well and I've got to sort of sit up for an hour trying to digest the food. How valuable is movement and sort of exercise or even walking after we eat?
Yeah, so like I said, we know that any form of exercise makes the muscles and the other parts of the body, like the organs, more susceptible, mate, to get the sugar from the blood into the muscles and everything like that. So that's definitely the one thing, because sometimes what now happens is we eat enough, but like you say, it stays in the stomach for quite a while, and then it stays in the blood for quite a while. And then that is what can sometimes lead to diabetes, because then we get that sugar craving after supper, which I know a lot of people talk about, where you've just eaten, but you must have something sweet, otherwise the meal is not completed. And this can be because you've maybe eaten so quickly, the body didn't even realize you were eating, or the food is taking quite long to get into the muscles because you maybe are already struggling with pre-diabetes or insulin resistance. And this can then make you crave that sugar. So at the end of the day, getting tested, going to the doctor, making sure that you also know everything that is going on in your body.
Fantastic. I want to just ask one more question on that, which we'll do as soon as we're back from these ads. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offer convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside. Dis-Chem Pharmacies, better health starts here.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Dis-Chem Medical Monday here on 101.9 High FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I'm joined by our guest, Elske Rich, dietitian and spokesperson for the Association of Dietetics in South Africa. We're chatting all things diabetes, as it is Diabetes Awareness Month. Let us have your questions for our guest on 061-895-1019. That is our in-studio number. Before we went to the break, we were chatting about mindfulness, being aware of what you eat, taking time to make sure that you focus on what you eat. The one thing that I wanted to talk about, and we're covering maintenance a bit, well, maintenance and just sort of balancing that lifestyle, and prevention is better than cure. We're all going away on holiday now, and you know, people have had a tough year. They want to go away, and there might be a little bit of excessive alcohol, excessive food, and we go to these wonderful restaurants and, you know, maybe chips on the side of the road, or there's a certain place in Hout Bay that does fantastic fried fish and chips that I love. And on the way there, there's that chocolate ice cream cake place, you know, that you pass driving back. Over time, over years, where we go maybe for a month or so with a massive increase in calories and in sweets intakes, how big a risk is that? How careful should we be going into festive seasons in terms of managing our intake? Because, you know, it's our health at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think what we need to really focus on and realize is that as South Africans, we already have a genetic predisposition to high blood pressure, high cholesterol levels, and then diabetes. So because we know that as a nation, we are already more susceptible to this if we don't look at our environment, it definitely must be a priority. Now, what I usually teach my clients is that at the end of the day, if we focus on health 80% of the time and we try to eat like angels who never eat anything wrong in the sense of the word, then it's okay for 20% of the time for us to enjoy festivities and to make sure that we still get joy from food. Because as South Africans, a lot of our special occasions and everything like that is based around food. We plan what we are having for Christmas before we plan different gifts for people. So,
before we plan who we're inviting.
Exactly, because what can they bring with to the table? Yeah. So at the end of the day, knowing that joy should still come from food and it shouldn't be this big thing that is daunting to us when it comes to health. Just making small changes, like instead of getting a slice of cake each, getting a slice of cake and everyone sharing it. And having your fried fish and chips for supper, but adding a vegetable to the side. Mm-hmm. Or the next day, then focusing on having fresh fruits and vegetables that are then once again high in fiber. I think at the end of the day, that balance is what we are after. We are not after being perfect people who never eat anything that is considered unhealthy. It's more just about prioritizing the things that we know are healthy. So even if it comes to alcohol consumption, like I said, to stay to the recommendation by the World Health Organization and focusing on the other fluids you consume in the day, making sure you get enough water. And even when you are maybe mixing drinks like a gin and tonic, that you use a gin that is not with added sugar and that your tonic is maybe sugar-free. That already makes a big difference in the amount of sugar that you consume. And the same with the snack platters that we put out when we are preparing for a meal or having a braai, including things higher in fiber. They're going to look at you weird only once. But when they start eating the carrots, cucumbers, and snap peas with hummus, then they'll realize, oh, this is actually tasty and it's adding fiber to the diet instead of just maybe having something that is refined and sugary. So small things like that already make a big difference.
It's not about chasing perfection. In your experience, how big of a point of failure has that been for people in their nutrition, in their diets, where they just want to, they want to do it all today, get it all perfect, and then you know what happens?
Yeah, no, extremely. I think at the end of the day, we all want to achieve things and we all want to be proud of ourselves. But at the end of the day, not making it about being perfect, but making it about if I fail, how quickly do I get up every time is what I really try to focus on. So yes, maybe you jumped off of the bandwagon and you ate three times too many. Just making sure that with the next meal already, you are focused on getting it back to being more balanced instead of saying, I've already failed, let's just go big or go home this weekend. So right. I think people don't always realize how damaging that can be to your long-term progress if you don't really focus on getting back onto what you are focused on and back towards your goals, if it's not something that, has a lasting effect. Because in the same way, if we eat perfectly healthy today, we're not going to lose 5 kilograms. So if you lose, if you choose to eat a slice of cake today, it's not like you're going to gain 5 kilograms. So eat it, but then savor it, enjoy it, and then move on from it, getting back towards the healthier options again.
Right. It's not about that perfection, but also it shouldn't be about punishing ourselves. So if you go big, it's not about not eating for the next 3 days because you're trying to make up for those calories, because that within itself can be incredibly damaging. Just get back on track and manage what you were doing. Definitely. In terms of type 1 diabetes, obviously I think the consequences are far more immediate if you're not getting your insulin, if you're not managing what you eat. But what can be done for those with type 1 diabetes to look after their health better?
So there are quite a few new products on the market, and we know that what sometimes hinders progress in this area is also because it's quite expensive. And depending on the medical aid you have, that's also going to limit the resources that's available to you. So we know that with type 1 diabetes, the main focus is just to control your blood sugar levels, keeping it between a certain range so that there's no damage done to the body. Because when the sugar is too high, it can damage a lot of things like the eyes, the heart, the kidneys, everything like that can get damaged. And then it's permanent damage as well. So that's why doctors are so focused on it. But on the other side, if the sugar goes too low, we know that the brain can start shutting down and the person can also go into a coma. So for that reason, for type 1 diabetic patients, it's extremely important to not skip meals, to also test their blood sugar regularly throughout the day. And what happens most often is that we try to match the type of medication they are on to how they should eat during the day. So for some people, it can be that they must eat 5 or 6 times in the day. For other people, it can be that they must eat 3 times a day, depending on the type of insulin they use, the amount they inject, how their lifestyle looks, everything like that. So the recommendation is always to work with your doctor and to also then see your dietitian for an individualized approach. But what is most important to know is that testing the sugar is not just to see how much medication we can have, but sometimes it's also later in life an indication of the types of food or the amount of food you can have. So there are different sensors that we can put onto the body that regulate that blood glucose. There are insulin pumps that we often use for children where they don't have to inject. They can just put the numbers into the pump. So at the end of the day, it's obviously a hard job because we're trying to do the job of an organ. But at the end of the day, there's lots of different support groups, especially for the parents as well, that I always recommend them getting into because it can feel like you are quite alone in that whole space.
And I'd like to touch on that when we're back from the ads because I think it's vitally important. What are the support infrastructures and networks that are available?
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
We've been chatting all things diabetes with Elska Rich, dietitian and spokesperson for the Association of Dietetics in South Africa. Just before we went to the ad break, we were talking about support and the need of support structures, particularly for parents of kids with type 1 diabetes. That must be quite a burden in terms of getting the kids medicated regularly, getting them used to the pumps, the monitoring equipment. What is available in terms of support structure?
I think at the end of the day, you only really know what those parents and the children as well have to deal with on a daily basis if you've experienced it firsthand. I mean, I've 100%. Seen patients with type 1 diabetes for many years now, and I still learn something new every single time. So knowing that what works for everyone doesn't work for you, but that we can still learn a lot from different people with the same experience. So definitely there are different type of support groups organized either by doctors or endocrinologists or dietitians as well. And never underestimate the power of social media or WhatsApp groups. So we know there's quite a few like Facebook mom groups as well in all different areas where there's definitely going to be very practical tips and tricks, but to always go back to the doctor and the dietitian if it's regarding anything specific like blood work or monitoring tools or anything like that. But I think we live in an era where a lot of information is available online. So doing it with caution and when it's an emergency is fine, but knowing that at the end of the day, your healthcare provider is going to be the best support for you, I think is very important.
Fantastic. And just, Elska, as we wrap up, what one piece of advice or a recommendation would you give to our listeners in terms of diabetes, whether it's type 1 or type 2, or mainly let's look at prevention?
Yes. So I think the most important thing is to know your numbers. So knowing your numbers, meaning that if you have never been tested before for diabetes, to go and test to just see and to monitor yourself. If it's something that runs in the family, to know that you must go and test at least once a year to just see what is happening in your body and how things progress. And even if you are already a diabetic patient, to continue to test and to see if you mustn't change your medication or change the way you are eating so that we get those ideal numbers. Knowing your numbers also doesn't mean your worth, because I know what can happen a lot of times is we are doing everything perfect, but maybe we are a bit more stressed or we got sick, and then the numbers can also go up. So knowing that at the end of the day, you can do everything to your power, but sometimes the body is still going to be uncontrolled. So knowing your numbers, but knowing that they don't define your worth.
So Elska, I absolutely love that. It's such great advice. Know your numbers, but your numbers are not your worth. Elska Rich, dietitian and spokesperson for the Association of Dietetics in South Africa, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for what you shared. You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle. On the buttons was Craig Guthrie, and our fantastic producer, Sina Babeti, put it all together. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for being part of the show. Look forward to chatting with you next week.